Welcome, everybody. A few things I wanted to get to this week. I didn't have the chance, and now I do, so let's do it. There's a quaint little hypothesis from MyPillow CEO and founder Mike Lindell about the forthcoming election. And as many of you know, Mike Pillow, as we know him, or even just Pillow for short, he is determined to grind to a screeching halt the 2022 and 2024 elections. And his new idea is something about voting machines. And he's explaining it to Steve Bannon. And it's the blind leading the blind. And I can't tell whether Bannon believed this stuff or whether either of them do. But take a look at the new strategy. This is wild.
This live link up with these technology people that you can actually go and get it to individual states and get injunctions to basically shut down the machines to be used in the 2020 midterm elections and state elections, 2022. Sir?
Yeah, the 2022, that's correct, Steve. And in any elections, it would be over. We're going to get...
It is over.
Preliminary injunctions, and it's with no machines because they cannot do elections accurately and they can be manipulated.
It wouldn't be accurate.
100%. They say, you know, they did it. They're caught now. They're guilty. It's in violation of fundamental rights to vote under 42-USC-1983, a violation of equal protection and also due process. We are starting with seven states immediately. We're going to get to every state. And of course, you're going to get pushback and stuff, but every state, by the way, you know who has the standing? All the voters, Steve.
Yeah. So there's a funny aspect to this. And Pillow is obsessed with machines and he's trying to remember when he said he was going to sue every machine.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
Oh, that is one of the funniest clips. My espresso machine has gone into hiding because of this forthcoming lawsuit. It is absolutely horrified. It may be completely shut down. The funny thing about this is it's cartoonish. It's off the wall. It's kooky. It's all of these different things. But the precedent that, or the rules, the law that Pillow cites just doesn't have anything to do with the use of voting machines. When he talks about 42 U.S. Code 1983, that's a section called Civil Action for Deprivation of Rights. And when you read it, it says every person and anyone who is deprived of a right has the ability to seek recourses and, you know, gives you standing, blah, 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 blah. The fact that voting machines are used doesn't deprive anyone of rights. You would have to demonstrate that. And of course, Pillow and others have failed to demonstrate that the mere existence of voting machines deprives someone of the right to vote, which is the right that we're talking about here. In addition to this, there's kind of the other side of it, which is if you got rid of all machines, if you did that and we simply had universal vote by mail. Everybody mails in a paper ballot and it's paper ballots counted one by one and then recounted. You count them and then you recount them. Okay. I would be fine with that. And it wouldn't be particularly good for Republicans. They love to claim, oh, the left would use mail-in ballots for fraud and all of it. There's no evidence of that. And we saw that in 2020. They claimed it, but there was not actually any evidence of it. It would take a really long time, and we've gotten used to, well, we want results sooner than that. But I would be fine with universal vote by mail and count every ballot by hand and have a paper trail. I'm okay with that, and I think many on the left would be. The reason they are trying to mess with the machines, so to speak, is both self-serving and due to things they misunderstand, as is often the case with much of what Republicans do. So does Pillow believe this, that he's about to shut down all these elections because they're getting rid of all the machines? Does Steve Bannon? It's hard to believe that anyone would believe it. At the same time, they've been saying it for a year and a half. So I don't know. You be the judge. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a radical Republican congresswoman who has been kicked off of all of her committees and fined for refusing to wear masks on the floor of the House to high heaven. She's been fined to high heaven at this point. She is now lying that Joe Biden is paying TikTok influencers. Now, as is almost always the case, sometimes they make up nonsense whole cloth. Like when she talked about Jewish space lasers or lasers, as Lindsey Graham called them, that was completely made up. But sometimes there's like a kernel of something. And it is true that the Biden administration met with TikTok influencers. There was rampant Russian propaganda on TikTok, and TikTok is a growing platform. We now are on we're taking TikTok seriously because we're having such explosive growth there, nearly 100,000 followers already. I think TikTok has grown faster than any platform we've ever been on for us. TikTok's it's growing. And so the Biden White House met with a bunch of TikTok influencers. They didn't pay them. And Marjorie Taylor Greene says that not only were they paid, they were paid off, and paid off has an additional pejorative connotation that it's, you know, people are being given money to say specific things they don't believe. Take a listen to this.
And what is the White House doing as the world slides dangerously close to devastating world war? Paying off TikTok influencers to lie for them, more concerned with favorable headlines from the Washington Post and the New York Times than avoiding world war, more concerned with social media likes than protecting American jobs and families.
So, of course, none of that is true. And there are numerous reports about this. Fortune magazine, Biden is using TikTok to fight back against Russia's reported use of influencers to spread propaganda. The White House countered holding. By the way, it wasn't even like they flew people to D.C. They did a Zoom briefing about Ukraine for 30 TikTok stars like that. That's the whole story. That's the whole story. And it says that National Security Council staffers and Jen Psaki gave updates. And I mean, it's almost like a just kind of like a non-story. And there has been significant use of TikTok by apparent Russian propaganda nodes, I guess we would call them, to spread, to sow doubt about the innocence of Ukraine in the context of the invasion, et cetera. And as is often the case with a lot of these right wingers, if they spent 10% of the time that they spent lying about what Democrats are doing, 10% of that time working to actually fix a problem, the country would be dramatically better off. And this is one of the great frustrations, which is we see the clip. It's 23 seconds of Marjorie Taylor Greene lying about Biden paying off TikTok influencers. And we debunk it pretty quickly. It's just it's not true. It was a Zoom meeting. No one was paid. That's all it was. Great. We've established that. But we are constantly kind of playing catch up in the sense that there are real problems to solve here. Even when it comes to Russia and Ukraine, what is going to be the long term economic impact? What should be the U.S. perspective as we become accustomed to the invasion? As you can already see, there's less coverage of it even now. The invasion is still going on. But once a story gets stretched out, you start to see less coverage or different types of coverage. And so what should be the continued attitude and media coverage and sanction framework and all these different things? And these are real things to figure out. What about Ukrainian refugees? What about arming Ukraine, but stopping short of the line that Biden drew, which is troops on the ground? These are all serious, important things. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is out there saying Biden's paying TikTokers. And it's just a flat out and complete lie. And I hate to use that tired phrase. This is why we can't have nice things. But in a literal sense, the fact that these are conversations that have to be pushed back against, or these are lies that have to be pushed back against. There's only 24 hours in a day and people got to sleep. Right. And so by having to say none of this stuff is happening in order to protect the reputation of the people that are actually working hard to try to solve problems, we lose time and resources and just headspace to actually deal with those problems. And it's a very sad thing. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at dpacman. Also, make sure that you are following us on TikTok, where you can find us at David Pacman Show. We are doing separate TikTok only updates on the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which you can follow there. We'll take a quick break and be back with a very packed Friday show for you today. The David Pacman Show does depend on the support of listeners and viewers like you through what we call the membership program. We do an extra show every day for our members and provide all sorts of other great perks and benefits. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. You can also use the coupon code WOW22 if you so please. Let's hear from some folks from the audience. We had some beautiful calls last week. We take calls via Discord, which you can find at davidpacman.com/discord. Let's go next to Ellie from Seattle. Ellie, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I feel like with the Don't Say Gay, the legislation that it just passed in Florida, and yeah, there's a number of like anti-trans bills across the country. I feel like we're watching a very slow train wreck. And I want to know, how do we stop it?
Yeah, I would say it's not even necessarily that slow. And it's all being driven by local elected officials. And like we've been saying for a very long time, you have to control governorships and state senates and state legislatures. And when you don't, these are the types of things that happen. And the danger level is exacerbated because we know that we have one of the most conservative Supreme Courts in a very, very long time. Even if Judge Jackson replaces Stephen Breyer, it doesn't change the balance of the court. It's still a very conservative court. And so there's the additional risk that one or two states will have some of these bills challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court and upheld, and then it's going to be open season in every red state. So I think this is the combination of about half a dozen different failures.
Yeah, and we're probably looking at Roe going to the Supreme Court too.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Yeah. Yeah, that's not, it's not at all impossible. It's completely plausible that that will happen. And, you know, I mean, I can't, there's no one thing, Ellie, that there is to blame for this. You know, it's like, yes, Democrats have not done enough at the state level. Yes, all these different things. But also, remember, Ellie, the people in 2016 who said Supreme Court picks, I don't care. I don't care whether it's Trump and Hillary. We would not be in this situation right now were Hillary Clinton the winner in 2016 and had Hillary Clinton been able to select some Supreme Court justices. We just wouldn't be in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there, I mean, you said it's not even necessarily a slow train wreck. Is there anything that we can do to mitigate it?
I mean, listen, there's elections in November. What can be done at the state level in November? How many governorships can be taken from Republicans? How many legislatures or state senates can be taken from Republicans? And I don't know the answer. I don't have the data in front of me, but it's not just about Senate and House of Representatives nationally. We've got to be doing better at the state level. And it's embarrassing, quite frankly.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, David.
Ellie from Seattle, thank you so much for the call. A disturbing situation. Let's go next to John from, is it pronounced Leicester? Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, no, it's a Leicester. We spoke before, actually. Like,
I remember.
The same question.
I remember. Yeah, I always want to get, because in the U.S., there are towns in the U.S. with the same spelling, but we call them Leicester.
That's fair. I mean, I used to call things like that because I'm from South Wales. So you probably, I don't know if you noticed in my accent.
I do.
A bit different from most English people. I almost pronounced Loughborough, Lugabruga when I first came here. And people laughed, which is fair. Like, but
That's a whole other English story, language. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about, like, I guess, like mainly the current political climate. I don't know. Maybe I've been naive over these last couple of years, but I don't know. Maybe you're about as worried as I am about the overall rise in right-wing opinions that the prototypical fascists and how that affects our current, like, I guess, Western outlook.
It sounds like I'm at least as worried as you. I mean, we have a few different things going on. First of all, you have the rise of right-wing hyper or super nationalism. And we've seen that in a number of European countries. We're seeing it to some degree in South America. We're seeing it in a lot of different places. In addition to that, Trump in the U.S. pulled a ton of people who were not previously engaged with politics into the political space. And they're almost exclusively horrible people. And some of them are like remaining involved for now. Now, depending on what happens here in the U.S. in November, they may become unengaged or disheartened. And we'll have to wait and see. But you then combine that with the effect of the radicalizing effect of social media's filter bubbles and echo chambers, which serves to reinforce these radical beliefs. And all of it together is a recipe for exactly the disaster that you're pointing out.
I guess it's hard to hide right now, at least currently from a British perspective, the influence as well of other powers on our, I guess, electoral systems. I mean, already now people are starting to talk in the UK about how much Russia had an effect on the Brexit vote,
right,
which was invariably driven by people's vitriol towards immigrants. I can say that, like, Leicester was the only part of the East Midlands that voted to remain. The rest, all the other counties voted leave. Leicester's proportionality wise, it's quite a diverse city. It's quite nice to live in. But the counties, it's like 99.94% white British. Leicester, 40% white British. And then we pretty much, I think, representation from 110 out of the 140 or so nations of the world.
What is the population of Leicester?
Oh, about 300K, I reckon. It's about a million in the Leicestershire area. Oh, I should know these things. I do. I've managed clinical projects in the NHS.
That's so very interesting. And now you mentioned white British. In your area, is there a distinction made between white British and, like, say, French or Italian folks?
I think so. And again, it depends on probably the person you ask. I think if you're going to ask somebody, you ask me, I'd probably talk more demographically. If you were to speak to somebody who was, I guess, like, had more traditionalist values, let's say, they probably would actually differentiate then again further and go, you know, these people are Eastern European, they're Western European. This is it's a quite a tricky situation in the UK. A lot of people have a lot of hatred towards people, particularly of Eastern European origin.
That's
very
interesting.
You'll see it in, like, the local community groups.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the interesting things in the United States is that the definition of who's considered white has changed over time. You know, there was a period where darker skinned Southern Italians were not considered white. Now, I think there are very few people that would argue that they are not white. But then there's questions as to whether, you know, are Persians white, and white supremacists say, well, Jews are not white, and you know, all these different things. It is very interesting how that changes. And it sounds like, at least where you are, there's still at least a significant portion that sees non-British Western Europeans as something a little different, at least.
Absolutely. Wow. And like, I think it's definitely what drove a lot of people to vote Leave, is this idea, an antagonistic view of it were towards, I guess, people outside of Britain.
Yeah.
It's, wow. I can't even escape it as a Welsh person. I've never really been one for nationalism, but I mean, yeah.
Interesting.
The difference between a Welsh nationalist and English nationalist is the language they speak.
Last thing, as a Welsh gentleman, how closely do you identify sort of with like the London milieu and culture? Like, do you feel like that's kind of what you're part of, or do you really feel like you're in a very different area?
Oh, why'd you have to ask me about London? It's my least favorite city, you know. I absolutely detest it.
But I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get to is culturally, do you feel like you, like Leicester and London are part of the same thing, or that it's really different?
I'd say it's similar, but different. I think it's similar in the sense that it is quite a diverse city and it is quite metropolitan. It's different in the level of, I guess, access to public services and healthcare. Like, this is, you know, it's an East Midlands city because of the lack of services. Whereas in London, I guess, London's always considered the utopia when you speak to people. It's the London lifestyle and then the others.
I
like Russia, Moscow, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's some in France, there's a lot of Paris and then everything else. And then the folks in Brittany often think of themselves as different as well. That's, yeah, the internal dynamics are interesting because from far away, like in the US, people just tend to have a sense of, oh, there's France and then there's the UK and then there's Italy. But within these countries, there are such dramatic differences.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Like, but no, thanks for taking my questions there.
All right, John, thank you. Great to hear from you again.
Where's...
All right, John from Leicester. What a call. Very, very exciting there for sure. Let's go next to Julius from Idaho. Julius, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. So I was just wondering, do you think the Ukraine war isn't...
Okay. So you cut out. What we heard you say was, do I think the Ukraine...
Excuse for the U.S. to get away with taking care of its citizens?
What we heard when you cut out... was, do I think the Ukraine war, and then you cut out. So do what was the rest of the question? Do I think the Ukraine war what?
Do you think the Ukraine war is an excuse for the U.S. to get away with taking care of its citizens? Just, you know, regular Bernie Sanders policies?
No, I'm not sure I even understand the question. Is the Ukraine war an excuse for who to get away with it?
The U.S., like their politicians. Like I'm saying, like, so for example, if Biden were to legalize marijuana, which he isn't, do you think he can still just get away with not legalizing marijuana because they're like focusing on the Ukraine war?
No, I think he was going to be able to get away with it regardless. I don't think he had any. And remember, the real discussion was decriminalization as far as Biden's concerned. I don't think he was ever really interested in it. And I think he'll be able to get away with not doing it regardless of what's happening in Ukraine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. There's Julius from Idaho. Let's go next to Fiona from Germany. Fiona, welcome. Fiona from Germany, please unmute. You're on the air. And last chance for Fiona from Germany to unmute. You're on the air, but you must have working audio. Hello, Fiona.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Sorry about my audio. It sometimes doesn't like changing channels.
I would be
interested in what's like your opinion on the German reinvestment into military, because I'm concerned about what my government does with talking so little to each other, let alone the general public, you know?
Yeah, I have to tell you, it's not a big shock to me that there's renewed interest in investment in a larger military in Germany, to be perfectly honest. And I think the reasons for that are, one is a more longer term reason and one is more short term. After seeing the way that the Trump presidency caused a rift with Germany, which is historically, in recent decades, such a great ally of the United States, it seems logical. Now, I'm not saying I love everybody having bigger militaries, but I'm just saying from the German perspective, if all of a sudden you're not quite so friendly with like one of your big allies that also has this massive military, which is the United States, it seems completely sensible that you would say, hey, we should probably just have a bigger military, given that we don't know what sorts of needs we might have that we need to go it alone for. If there's another Trump where we're all of a sudden not getting along so well, or the American president can't be relied upon or is just a loose cannon. So that to me makes a lot of sense as to why it would make Germany have a renewed interest in having a stronger military. Does that make sense?
Somewhat, but I would have expected that it would be a more European approach, especially since we still rely on the French president to say whatever our military is going to do, like 2 weeks in advance.
Okay. Yeah. But I think that it, even if you consider it a European interest, I would include France in this as well. I mean, all of these Western European countries suffered a situation during Trump's 4 years where all of a sudden the U.S. was a different sort of ally than previous to Trump. So it does make a lot of sense to me.
I do get that, but like declaring national budget to me was disturbing. Like at the same time, it was also announced that Germany would just like put some troops in reserve for the European Commission to have emergency access to, which I believe would have been more popular with the German general public than just throwing double the annual budget on the military once.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying that thinking about it from a geopolitical perspective, I understand it. I think the other thing also is there's probably some degree to which the Russian invasion of Ukraine is making a lot of countries just kind of reevaluate their military capabilities. And it wouldn't be surprising to me that that might also push some militaries or some countries to want to strengthen the military either. Although that's more of a short term, hopefully a short term thing.
Thanks for taking my question.
My pleasure. Fiona from Germany. What a call. What a call. Let's go next to Barry from Milwaukee. Barry, welcome.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I had a question. If you were, you know, canvassing in Milwaukee or Wisconsin, one of these swing states, and you were talking to a voter and you were saying this is the biggest accomplishment of the Biden administration, what would you bring up?
I mean, so here's the thing about it. I think right now there's a few of what I would consider the major Biden accomplishments, and it would depend on who I'm talking to. So I would need to know more about what a Wisconsin voter is likely to care about. But I would say that the infrastructure package, the vaccine rollout, COVID stimulus, and getting out of Afghanistan would be the four big accomplishments. Once Judge Jackson is confirmed to the court, and I believe she will be, I would also add that to the list as the five big Biden accomplishments so far. But which one I would list depends on who I'm talking to and what I believe they care about.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like that makes sense. Just what I wanted to put on your radar, because, you know, I've been doing voter outreach in the state for a few years now. It's just like knocking doors right now and phone calls are very hard. People are plugged out, are very negative. And so I'm worried about the possible wins we could have in the future for the next couple of years.
Right. Well, listen, so, I mean, at this point, seeing the three Supreme Court justices that Trump got, and now that Joe Biden is getting one, I can't imagine only the most kind of depraved, bury your head in the sand Democrats at this point would fail to see Imagine if Hillary had gotten those three Supreme Court picks. OK, and think about Roe v. Wade might go away. Look at what's happening with all of these different issues that now are going to the Supreme Court. And we have one of the most right wing courts we've had in a really long time. Just think back how this would have been different if Hillary had won. And that should really remind us of when Joe Biden now gets one pick, the people who wrote off the Supreme Court as an irrelevant issue. Wow. Wow. I hope that they feel ashamed of themselves.
You know, David, that's actually was really helpful in motivating me to, you know, keep at it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Very good. Yes, absolutely. Keep at it. Let's take a quick break. We're going to keep taking calls. So don't hang up if you're holding. We're just taking a very quick break and then we'll be right back. Let's go back to the audience on our Discord. If you'd like to call in, you can go to davidpakman.com/discord. Let's speak next to Harrison from California. Harrison, you are on the air. Welcome.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
I didn't really come with a specific question other than just to share frustration. Not too long ago, actually, I think it was the other night, I watched a clip of yours where someone asked about how your girlfriend communicates with a largely conservative family. And it resonated with me. I have both my parents, whom are separated, have over the past 6 years been just completely inundated with the conservative talk, the typical conservative talking points, you know, you name it, from Fox News to, Tucker Carlson to, my mom, who's always been more conservative, but she has turned into, like, she's just gone straight down the rabbit hole to the point where, you know, she sends me stuff and she's on like Telegram with these QAnon people, and I'm just like, I try to say, like, look, you need to get rid of this. She has no ability to tell right from wrong. And I mean, the most ironic thing is when I bring counterpoints up, she gives my points more scrutiny and criticism than the points that other people are telling her. She just like accepts, you know, it's typical. I expect it, accepting the things that agree with her and, you know, things that she doesn't agree with.
Hey, let me ask you this. What field does she work in?
She's been in sales a lot, but she's like in kind of like the real estate kind of thing right now.
Does she seem to have an ability to think critically within the field of real estate? In other words, when people make claims about, oh, look, it looks like you've got a termite damage. No, we don't. It's fine. That's actually nothing. Is she able to discern that, like, people might be lying there, or is she generally naive?
Generally, I mean, it's more of a like happy go lucky person. And I mean, it's worked for, you know, she's a kind hearted person, like in reality. But yeah. The one thing is, you know, she's like a little bit of her background, her and her family, my parents and aunts and uncles, grandparents ran away from communism, and from China. And for that reason, their whole journey to get to America back, you know, in the 50s and 60s, really, you know, is what got them really patriotic and really appreciate the country, which is something that when I was growing up really, you know, made me kind of proud and stuff like that. But it always gave, you know, my family's pretty split. So half of it is a little more liberal, half of it's a little more conservative. And she does exhibit a little bit of like critical thinking when it matters. But I mean, at the same time, like, I couldn't, you know, if she went to take her car in to get fixed, like, she'd probably get ripped off, to tell you to be the truth. Like, I'm usually have to be the one to be like, okay, wait, like, does this actually need to happen? Need to do this. So it sounds like
maybe there's just a personality predisposition to sort of accept what people are saying in some way. And it's not just on politics.
Yeah, there is a predisposition. And that's why I feel like she's more of a victim of the the whole, you know, narrative that they're trying to pitch, because she's definitely someone, when I was growing up, you know, the AM radio is always on, always talking to Rush Limbaugh, or like listening to all these shows.
Yeah.
And she would come home from work and like the first things out of her mouth was just, you know, oh my God, Obama's going to do this, you know, this and that, the, you know, they're going to try and take over the country. And I'm like, it's not that bad. I've literally been sitting through 30 years of the sky is falling, essentially, about, you know, liberalism. And I was in the Marine Corps for 7 years. And so I get the conservative, you know, patriotic conservative standpoints, and just only really over the past like 5 years have I really just kind of turned and been like, you know, that there's really nothing that, you know, insane that's happening on this side. Like this, there are like crazy ideas, but there's crazy ideas on both sides, and the stuff that ends up getting executed and signed into action really are pretty mild at the end of the day.
Hey, in the Marine Corps, were there any progressives, or was it very, very conservative?
It's largely conservative. Absolutely. There are like, I've met quite a few like rational, level-headed people. They might still fall on the conservative spectrum, and but there definitely are, like, I mean, it's probably, I would say some of the best people I've met have been the ones that have ended up being a little more like moderate to liberal on, like, in political view. And that's not just by like me asking them like, hey, what are you? But it's just their personality showed it, which is what, you know, why we became great friends. And then later on, I was like, oh, hey, like, you know, after getting to know them, like, hey, he's actually kind of, you know, rational thinking in the military. But it's definitely a minority.
Well, Harrison, you've really said it all. I appreciate it. Sounds like a complicated situation, but I wish you the best.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
All right. Harrison from California. That's quite a scene, that's for sure. I would not, that's complicated. Let's go next to Pablo from Albuquerque. Pablo, you're on the air.
Can you hear me all right?
Just barely, Pablo. You're barely audible. It sounds like you're about 2 miles from your microphone. Is there anything you can do? We're going to have to let Pablo go, unfortunately. We've never had a caller so quiet. You know who we haven't spoken to for a while? Our other Cancun caller. It's Bitdefender. Bitdefender, welcome.
Hey, David. I hope you're well.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Excellent. What's on your mind today?
I was listening, enjoying your Monday theme show about critical race theory. And there was a point the show in which you mentioned how angry and how mad people got at these rallies and events. I do believe there's some element of heightened anger. You know, Republicans seem more prone to outrage in this sense. I think because of the culture war, but that's beside the point.
Okay.
The question is, given that anger and stress usually have negative health consequences, and this is a bit of a random question, do you think maybe in the future we will see, you know, statistically significant enough differences in health outcomes by political ideology?
Well, we already might. So there's a very interesting thing about that, which is the red states on average have worse healthcare systems and lower life expectancy. It's already the case.
Of course.
Now, there's a real question as to whether within those states there's a difference in life expectancy based on political ideology. But like, for example, Mississippi, which is one of the reddest states, has very bad health care. And, you know, Connecticut, which is a very blue state, has very good health care. So we already see that. The counterbalance is, I believe it's still true that conservatives on average have more kids than liberals. So you could, I mean, it's complicated math, but you could have a situation where the Republicans have lower life expectancy, but they're reproducing more quickly, and that allows them to keep winning elections. It's we need more data to answer the question, but it's an interesting one.
Well, I mean, I don't know about influencing electoral outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, the question is mostly, like individual health outcomes on average, given the externalities of stress and, you know, heightened negative emotion.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a question that we just need data to answer, and it's data that I don't have. The data we do have, though, is that on average, life expectancy is longer in blue states, and it would stand to reason that if you extrapolated that out, on average, you may well be right that leftists have a slightly longer life expectancy than right wingers by virtue of where they live, not because of their ideology. You're asking a more specific question, but I think it's a fascinating one. I don't know the answer.
You know, is it one of those questions that pop into your mind because you are a busy person, you live stress on a daily basis, I guess. I suppose you can tell that it does take a toll on your health. I can't imagine what it would be to live in a world in which, you know, most of the Republican beliefs are, well, certainly true for them, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that was my question. Thank you very much, David.
Hey, how are, it's been years since I've been to Cancun. How are things there right now?
Well, you know, the city keeps growing. Big urban problems keep, you know, happening, keep popping up. This is a city that was originally designed for 250,000 people, and we're breaking 1.1 million, I think.
Wow.
You know, there's issues related to that. A lot of wealth inequality between the planned part of the city and the new parts for, you know, various different reasons related to government.
As someone who lives there, do you ever go to the hotel zone, or do locals never go to that area?
Oh, I work at the hotel zone.
Oh, you work there. Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, how about people who live there and don't work in the hotel zone? Do they ever go to the hotel zone?
Yeah. Think of it like you live in New York, I think. Think of it like the nicer part of town that it's not downtown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like where the very high-end restaurants are. It's where usually very affluent people will just live, you know, like they will eat, work, and sleep in the hotel zone.
Got it.
You know, in residences and whatnot. But yeah, and you will see a big wealth difference here between the people that live here and the people that work.
Got it. All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Great to hear from you again.
Thank you, David.
All right. There's Bitdefender strongly defending bits in Cancun. Let's go to Dar from Moscow. Now, is this Moscow, Russia, or Moscow, Idaho? Dar, you're on the air. Please unmute. And last opportunity for Dar from Moscow. So curious, is it Moscow, Russia? We may never know if Dar cannot unmute. Too bad. Would have been very interesting if it was Russia. Let's go to Robert from San Diego. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, you can hear me.
Yes.
Wow, amazing. It's been a long time. Tried to be on the show. I'm just trying to be. I want to say that I have some mental illness, some problems. I want to make sure that I am calm and capable.
Beautiful.
When I'm talking.
You're doing great.
Okay. First, I started watching your program. Sometime last year. I really admire it. Your ability to stay calm and collected is just amazing.
Thank you.
Especially with people, you know, all these controversial figures. I just wanted to give you my perspective a little and have one little question for you. I'm going to try to make it quick.
Now, Robert, just in the interest of time and because your Discord is blinging up a storm, maybe for today we could get right to the question.
Okay. Yes. Oh, my right to the question. I have been watching Belarus for years and years and years, and I've known what autocracy really is. My question for you is, how long do you think Trumpists would like Trump to be president?
You know, I think it depends on which ones you ask.
20 years?
Yeah.
I mean, gosh.
I think that there are Trumpists who, if they thought Trump could keep winning, would say there should be no term limits on. They would say, listen, if we want to keep electing him, why shouldn't he be allowed to just stay in the White House? I don't think that applies to all Trumpists, though.
To all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because with me watching that, I was always wondering about that. I was thinking, oh my gosh, that would be a nightmare.
No, you're completely right that there are Trumpists who would say there's no reason for term limits. We think Trump could keep winning and he should just stay in for as long as people want him. Not all of them, but some of them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robert, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it. You've done a great job. And let's hope to hear from more people in the future. That's going to do it for today. As always, we can't ever take every call, but we will take calls again very soon. It's time for the weekly mailbag. If you have something you want to say to me, and many of you do, you can email info@davidpakman.com. Please don't abuse it, but you can do that. You can email info@davidpakman.com. Let's get right in. We're going to start with a very, very ugly message. This one actually came in via Facebook. This was a response to our clip last week about evolution. You might remember that Republican Senate candidate Herschel Walker last week said, if evolution is real, why are there still monkeys? And we talked about that last week. Now, this viewer wrote to me, very angry, making the following counterpoint. Think about water. Were, did it came from, or did it also evolved? And, you know, I never have considered the evolution of water in this entire crazy thing we called life. I don't have an answer to that. This person also went on 2 hours later to write and say, as a follow-up, in all caps, Jehovah is the name of the creator, whether you believe it or not. Just because you may not like it doesn't mean is not true. So quite a diatribe from the standpoint of the evolution of water. And this, of course, a reminder that education is really a problem in the United States. If we had a solution to the education problem, we would be much better off politically, we would be much better off culturally, and we would be much better off economically, I would argue. So there it is, the evolution of water, not something I had thought about before. John wrote in, and John said, hey, Pac-Man or Pac-Man, whatever, I am expressing my opinion here as a viewer. You have a horrible, stupid show. Stop broadcasting now. Stop wasting your time. Get a real life and grow up. I love these emails. And the reason I love these emails, and I know there are people in our audience who like the show and who are miserable in their jobs. And I don't take any pleasure in that. That makes me feel bad. I want everybody to have a job they like and that's sustainable financially and all these different things. One of the things I love is people who are very clearly not satisfied with their own lives write to me and say, you got to get a real job. You got to get a real life. You've got to grow up, etc. This job is fine. I love the hours. I'm very satisfied with the salary. I'm very satisfied with the meaning of what I'm doing. And it's just so funny to hear from other people who are clearly miserable in their lives, which in many cases is what causes them to lash out at random people on the internet that they don't know. There's something funny about them saying to me, you got to get your life together, kid. So anyway, thank you, John. I appreciate the message. Okay. P. Samuels wrote in. This is the last negative one. Then we're going to go to positive and substantive stuff. I very seldom write to shows on TV or otherwise. I guess I'm lucky in that way. David Pakman is a true low IQ imbecile. Do us all a favor and ask him to keep his mouth shut. There is so much dribble coming forth from his mouth. It is beyond disgusting. Well, thank you, sir. I will keep that in mind. I guess I should really reconsider this show. It seems like at least two people very, very much don't like it. That's P. Samuels. All right, let's get into some other stuff. Sorry. I apologize. There's one more negative one. And this so here's the point with this one. We covered Trump's last rally in, choking here. I'm going to take a sip of water. We covered Trump's last rally in South Carolina. And I mentioned on Twitter that Trump was particularly disheveled, slurring, confused, both eyes almost completely swollen shut. And it seemed that a lot of his followers realized it was not a great performance, but they decided to take it out on me. They were furious with me for my commentary on the rally. Newpont wrote to me and said about the rally, David, you are disgusting. You are an arrogant, ignorant fool sucking up to the likes of Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, the Squad, and the rest of the socialist elite in Washington. Now, what I love about that is I'm not a fan of Nancy Pelosi's. I can't remember the last time I spoke about Chuck Schumer. I can't remember the last time I praised the Squad. And I'm not a socialist, so I actually don't know what this person's talking about, but doesn't matter. Here's the amazing part of the email. I watched the Trump rally. The man is brilliant. You are an idiot and a fool, and your snide little snippets during the president's presentation exuded and reeked of your ignorance and arrogance. Go drown yourself in the swamp of Washington, D.C. I have never watched your show. Had never even heard of you until I watched this rally on your channel, and I will never, ever in the history of the world watch you again. You are a sick man. Here's what I would say to you, sir. Anyone who believes Trump is brilliant should not like my show. I would consider it a problem. I would be concerned if someone who thinks Trump is brilliant liked what I was doing. It. I consider it praise. It is confirmation that I'm doing something right, that people who think Trump is brilliant don't like me. That's a great thing. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Okay, David wrote in with some ideas for an alternative to screed. Back in February, I would often describe Trump's unhinged rants as febrile screeds. David wrote in and said, I've noticed you keep referring to various wacky or delusional rants by right-wing politicians as screeds. For example, Donald Trump's latest febrile screed. Perhaps a distinction without a difference, but technically screed refers to a written rant, not a spoken one, as you mean to say. There are a number of alternatives you can test out, including diatribe, tirade, and polemic. In all seriousness, thanks for calling out the buffoonery of these right-wing radicals when they issue such febrile screeds. With peace and love. Yeah, I had something like for March, since it has an M. I think it was a manic. What was it? Manic? I don't remember now. Anyway, I'll work on something else. Maybe a delusional diatribe would be some appropriate alliteration. Another David wrote in, Dave, who says, David, you mentioned that the democracy rating of Ukraine is 60 and Russia is 20. Where does the United States fit on the same scale? So that particular ranking was from the Freedom House. And in that Freedom House index, the U.S. ranks at an 82 on the democracy ranking. So in that one, it's U.S. 82, Ukraine 60, Russia 20. Now, I think that there is a case to be made that in the United States, people are less free than in some other countries in a particular way. And that is the ability to live your life the way you want without worrying about having medical coverage. That's not typically considered in most of these kind of like freedom and democracy rankings. I would argue, and I would argue it very strongly, that if you know that no matter what you do, you have medical care, you are more free to pursue a passion that may not come with health insurance and the job that you would tend to have to get health insurance. You are free to stay home and raise children without having to worry about, will I have health insurance? So that's not typically part of these freedom and democracy rankings. I believe it should be, because in countries where you are guaranteed health care, regardless of your job, you are more free in a sense, although I understand that it's a little bit different than issues of corruption and the like. But In the Freedom House Index, the U.S. ranks at 82 compared to Ukraine 60 and Russia 20. Brian writes in and says, I have enjoyed watching some of your YouTube pieces. I have a suggestion. Say electoral instead of electoral. See what you think. Keep calm and carry on. So I looked this up, and this is going to relate to a later email. I am finding that both pronunciations, electoral and electoral, are both appropriate. Electoral comes more naturally to me. And I don't know if it's that I speak English as a second language or what, but electoral just feels more natural. Okay, Sherry wrote in asking, is the White House beautiful or is it a dump? David, go back and look at videos from when Trump first won in 2016 and went to the White House. He called the White House a dump. Now he says it's beautiful, the beautiful White House. What a schmuck he is. As bad as Hitler, disgusting human being. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Yeah, I mean, listen, the guy's a total hypocrite. Putin's good or Putin's bad. Ukraine's good or Ukraine's bad. He will build the wall or not, or he'll replace Obamacare or he won't. Or it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he says. We don't really know what he believes. I believe he basically believes nothing. He believes whatever is convenient to say at the time. But I actually remember the opposite also, because there were times while Trump was there that he called the White House beautiful. And then now that Biden's there, says that it's a dump and it's been disgraced or whatever. Sherry, I just wouldn't worry about it. Don't worry about what Trump says on the White House. Last email is from Kate. Kate says you might want to be careful citing a dictionary as a prescriptive reference. This is a common error. A dictionary is a descriptive tool, not a prescriptive one. It describes the language that existed at the time of publication. Using the dictionary to say the dictionary says X means Y isn't helpful. The dictionary doesn't tell people what to use now. It tells you what people used then. Well, I mean, listen. That's totally fair. When I say I looked up the acceptable pronunciations of such a word and here's what the dictionary says, you could say, well, those were acceptable at the time the dictionary was written. But I think that that actually sort of goes to my point, which is absent that, then any pronunciation would be acceptable, because at the end of the day, it's just what people are doing. It would be you would better be able to justify. No. The pronunciation of electoral is appropriate because it's what I use. It's kind of an endless loop. So I think when it comes to accepted pronunciations, I think it's okay to look at the dictionary. But I do understand how looking at the dictionary for definitions, like, you know, when Jesse Lee Peterson said to me, what is a man? The dictionary may not reflect the political and cultural realities of the time. I think that that's fair. And I appreciate the comment from Kate. We have a great bonus show coming up. You can sign up at joinpacman.com to get instant access.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Free people refused to live in a world of hopelessness and darkness. For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
President Biden calls for Russian President Vladimir Putin to be removed from office during a speech in Poland. While the White House denies Biden was calling for regime change, many fear Biden's remarks could make it harder to reach a diplomatic agreement to end Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We'll speak with Congressmember Ro Khanna and retired Army Colonel Andrew Bacevich. Plus, we look at the plight of African students who fled Russia's war on Ukraine, only be detained by European border officials. And we'll go to Jamaica. The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge have just wrapped up a week-long visit to former British colonies in the Caribbean.
I strongly agree with my father, the Prince of Wales, who said in Barbados last year that the appalling atrocity of slavery forever stains our history. I want to express my profound sorrow. Slavery was abhorrent, and it should never have happened.
The royal visit was met by protests and demands for reparations. We'll speak to Jamaican MP Lisa Hanna. She says Jamaica needs more than royal regrets over slavery. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The mayor of Mariupol is warning the besieged southern port city in Ukraine is on the cusp of a humanitarian catastrophe over incessant Russian attacks and amidst dire shortages of food, water, power, and other essentials. The mayor says 160,000 civilians are trapped and that Russian forces are blocking safe exit routes to evacuate evacuate them. Meanwhile, the UN says there's mounting evidence of mass graves in Mariupol. On Sunday, lifelong Mariupol resident Valentina assessed the situation in the city, which has largely been left in ruins.
I've lived here since my birth, and my husband as well. We got married here and have babies. What now? What is left for us? I don't want to go anywhere from Mariupol, but there's nowhere to live here.
Ukraine's foreign ministry said last week 6,000 Mariupol residents had been, quote, forcibly deported and taken to Russia as hostages. President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of kidnapping over 2,000 Ukrainian children since the start of the war. Russia continued its assault on other parts of Ukraine over the weekend, including airstrikes on Chernihiv and cruise missile attacks on Lviv in western Ukraine that came as President Joe Biden visited neighboring Poland. New talks between Ukraine and Russia are set to take place in Istanbul, Turkey, on Tuesday. President Zelensky said Sunday he's prepared to negotiate a deal with Russia that includes some of Moscow's demands.
Security guarantees and neutrality, non-nuclear status of our state. We are ready to go for it. This is the most important point. It was the main point for the Russian Federation, as far as I can remember, and if I remember correctly, this is why they started the war. We will not sit down behind the table if we talk about some kind of demilitarization, some kind of denazification.
Comments. President Zelensky insisted on Ukrainian sovereignty and territorial integrity after suggestions he could concede on the status of the eastern Donbas region and reports Moscow would seek to split the country in two in a, quote, Korean scenario. Meanwhile, U.S. officials have had to walk back remarks made by President Biden during a Saturday speech from Poland.
We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principle, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom and possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
The White House rushed to do damage control on Biden's unscripted comment about Putin, saying the U.S. is not seeing